Leftists in America have taken over our educational system, and as a result of this takeover, have facilitated the introduction and spread of political Islam as a religion of peace. It is past time for true conservatives, libertarians, those who love true freedom and liberty as set forth in the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, and by the way, Christians should be leading the fight. It is time to enter into a public discourse and, if need be, become aggressive opponents of the acquiescence to this cultural and national suicide. It is time to stop the spread of political Islam in all its manifestations. Stay tuned for my conversation about political Islam with return guest Dr. Bill Warner on this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. And thank you to our friends at Global Star Radio Network, Talk America Radio Network, and Prepper Broadcasting Network for airing the show. You can subscribe also on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and all of the normal, usual social media sites. And, of course, listen to every episode on our website, SoaringEagleRadio.com. You can follow us on Twitter at SoaringEagleRad, SoaringEagleRad. My guest today is Dr. Bill Warner. He is the director of the Center for the Study of Political Islam. You can find them on Twitter, CSPI, at CSPI. I believe that's what it is, but I'll check with Bill when we get to chatting. The Center for the Study of Political Islam, its goal is to teach the doctrine of political Islam and through that effort to inform and educate. It accomplishes that goal primarily through books, videos, and lectures. The center's website is www.politicalislam.com. Welcome back to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Bill.
Good to be back, Mike.
It's good to have you back. I really appreciate your insights and years of study and research into political Islam. It has certainly been very valuable for me to learn from your research, so thank you. For the sake of our listeners who have not yet listened to our first conversation about Islam, and I've got to encourage them to go back and listen to that. That was very foundational, and our conversation today will build on that. But for the sake of our listeners, let me read this, and then I'll invite your comments. All Islamic doctrine is based on the words of Allah and the Sunnah of Muhammad. Allah is found in the Quran, and Muhammad is found in the Sirah, which is his biography, and the Hadith, which is the traditions surrounding Muhammad's life. All of Islam is based on the Quran, Sirah, and Hadith. If it is in this trilogy of documents, it is Islam. If it is not in this trilogy, then it is not Islam. Therefore, if you desire to know Islam, you must know the trilogy. There is an inherent problem in knowing the trilogy, however. The problem is that the Quran, the Sirah, and the Hadith were designed to be difficult to understand. There's only one way for them to be understood. They must be viewed as a systematic whole, not three separate books. Bill, why is it important that we see the Islamic trilogy as a whole?
Well, let me give you the counterexample. How many times have you heard this? I tried reading the Quran, couldn't make any sense out of it at all. I finally just gave up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, often.
Well, that's because they started at the thick end of the wedge instead of the thin end of the wedge. You need to understand. There is only one way to understand the Quran, and this is not what I say. This is what all scholars who've dealt with the Quran say. You must know the life of Muhammad in order to understand the Quran. So therefore, in my training system, I have a training system called the Foundations of Islam. I start off with the life of Muhammad. Now, it's a place to start for several reasons, one of which is it is so fascinating and so interesting. Muhammad's life would make a fabulous Hollywood spectacular. You've got spies, counter-spies, secret agents, executions, slave-taking, battles, betrayals. It is an incredible story. And that incredible story, once you understand it, is found within the Quran itself. So, but the main reason you want to study this material is that, well, I see the main reason. For me, I find it fascinating because when you read the Quran, the Sirah, and the Hadith, you are reading the very foundations of Islam, and you can understand everything you need to know about it. The place, the counter place not to go is to a professional engineer who is a Muslim at work.
Yes.
Because there you just get an opinion of a Muslim, and there's only two voices that count, Allah and Muhammad.
Yes, yeah. The trilogy, is this a fair statement, Bill, that the trilogy also explains the five pillars, that the Quran alone does not provide enough information for the Muslim to practice the five pillars?
This is quite true. I came to my study of the Quran after a lifetime of having read sacred documents. I've devoted my life to the reading of all religions' basic documents, whether it's the Bhagavad Gita. I, for instance, studied for a year and a half at a Torah class at an Orthodox synagogue. So, but when I came to finally to reading the Quran, there were many things that sort of, I realized they're like, this is a strange sacred text. Never mind the violence and the jihad. But one of the things that's strange about it is there's not enough in it to practice the religion of Islam, the so-called five pillars. Now, the first of the five pillars is there is no God but Allah, Muhammad is his prophet. That is the Shahada. That is not found within the Quran itself, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
So anyway, only by reading the Hadith and the Sirah can you understand how to pray. Exactly, there's a charity tax called the Zakat. Well, how is that to be administered? How is it to be used? We find all that in the Hadith. And so anyway, the Quran is an incomplete work. And only when you weave in the Sirah and the Hadith do you get an understandable body of knowledge. Now, let me say this. Once you do that, it all becomes very easy to understand.
Is that, Bill, is that something that the average, and I'm not even sure that's an appropriate way to describe a practitioner of Islam, but for the average Muslim who is trying to practice Islam, are they taught by their imams that they have to read, study, and understand the Sirah, the Hadith, along with the Quran?
Actually, no. Most people who learn about Islam, they just go and listen to what the imam says. The original works, let's just start with the Hadith. The Hadith just means traditions. The shortest of the traditions is war is deceit, three words. Some of them are a page and a half long, but they're little events that happened in Muhammad's life. There are 7,000 of those in the one collection. Now, who's going to sit down and read 7,000 traditions of Muhammad? Well, practically no one.
Right.
Then you have the Sirah, the life of Muhammad. It's 800 pages of fine print written in academic prose, and it's some of the most difficult reading I've ever done. So, and the Quran, of course, is famous for being obscure, contradictory, and not understandable. So what happens is the average Muslim does not study Quran, Surah, Hadith. Instead, they just listen to what the imam tells them.
Wow. You know, some people may get upset at me for saying this, Bill, but it is the truth, so I'm going to say it. That sounds remarkably similar to many Christians who don't study their Bibles, and in fact, many of them don't even carry the Bible with them when they go worship the Lord they say they serve, and to hear a Bible teaching. They just go and they listen to what the pastor says, and that's good enough for them.
I don't understand that.
I don't either.
I want to get to the good part myself.
Exactly.
Besides that, how can I trust the guy in the front of the room? I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I'm a scientist by training, and scientists are naturally skeptic.
Yes.
Show it to me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And Bill, that's one reason why I tell the fellowship that I have the blessing of pastoring, listen, and I say this from the pulpit, I've said it dozens of times over the years, you don't have to believe a word I say. You have a Bible right there with you, and you can look it up and study it for yourself. And I pray that you'll do that. And if you find that the answer, the interpretation you get is dramatically opposed to what I just said, then I expect to be hearing from you. We need to do that more often, don't we?
Well, my books have a built-in reference system to it. And I tell people, do not believe anything that I say. If you're reading my book, Muhammad and the Unbelievers, which is the Sirah, one of the books I've written, and you read it and it says, and Muhammad said, go and kill every Jew you can find. And you say to yourself, he would have never said that. That is ridiculous. That paragraph, as all the paragraphs in my books, have a reference number in it that traces you back to the original source material.
Perfect.
So if you don't believe he said that, there's a reference index. Go look it up in the original source text, the 800-page book, and you'll discover that is exactly what he did.
Exactly what he did. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I've known of people who've read my books with a laptop at their elbow, and a guy told me this. He said, for a while, everything you said, I would Google, and finally he just said, forget about it.
He said, well, obviously this guy did his homework because he's been exactly right. That's good testimony. That's what you want people to do. You want them to check it out.
No, but I'm very serious when I say, do not believe me.
Yes.
Go and read the original
source material. Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, Bill, we're living in some very, very strange times, and that's an understatement. And as insane as it sounds, there are some people in America who are actually advocating for Sharia law. And I'm not referring to Muslims here. Americans... I don't know how else to say it besides there are many Americans who have just flat out lost their minds. They've lost the ability to do any critical thinking. And I'm even talking about groups that should know better that Islam as it is practiced under Sharia law, they would be the first ones to be executed or imprisoned or whatever. But people advocating for Sharia law in America, I never thought I would live to see the day, Bill, but it's happening all over the place, isn't it?
Well, Americans are suffering from the Canadian disease of being too nice.
Yes, that's the truth. Yeah, that's a
and
fact.
So what is the result is they want to be nice, and if you want your laws, and the other thing is we've also lost respect for laws. I have seen many judges make decisions that I couldn't figure out how they made the decision because it was on personal opinion.
Yes, right, right. Wasn't based on...
When people say that, oh, Sharia's okay, I say, well, what about wife beating? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
What about inbreeding? Is that okay? What about killing apostates? Is that okay? Well, of course, not even a fervent leftist believes that you should beat your wife or marry your cousin. And he doesn't believe you should be killed for leaving Islam. But these things are all found in Sharia. So I found that what you need to do is to not say Sharia, but say Sharia wife beating, Sharia jihad, Sharia whatever, Sharia inbreeding. And that way you break it off into small pieces and the people are like, well, you know, I'm not really for inbreeding.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Well, we've got in America today, too, a whole cadre, different groups of people that I don't care what the situation is, what the alleged, real or imagined offense is to Islam or to Muslims. They are Johnny on the spot to defend Islam. Now, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Bill, there was a billboard put up in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
And there was no mention, if I recall this, there was no mention of Islam. There was no mention of a Muslim. There was no mention even of Muhammad. It just simply said something to the effect of a perfect man. And then there were some bullet points. Let me see here. I think I printed that off someplace. Anyway, are you familiar with that situation there, Bill?
Very much so.
Okay. So there was a almost immediate firestorm of a very virulent response, really coming after the man that paid to have this billboard up. And here's the article. So I'm just going to read these bullet points, and then you can, you can comment. And I just thought it was a perfect example of the what's really happened to Americans. But here are the bullet points. Under the banner, just said a perfect man, and then it said married a 6-year-old, was a slave owner and dealer, was a rapist, beheaded 600 Jews in one day. 13 wives, 11 at one time, tortured and killed unbelievers. So those were the 6 bullet points. It didn't mention Muhammad, didn't mention Islam at all. But of course, Muslims knew exactly who it was referring to. And there was a huge firestorm over this, wasn't there?
Well, there was. But the guilty dog did bark, didn't it?
That's exactly right. Yeah, sure did.
And by the way, That's a short list which could be made much, much longer.
Yes. Yeah.
It's all true.
Yeah, it's all true. Now, there was I've got my hand on the article, Bill. It says right after it happened, the same day that everything blew up over there, a Republican Indiana senator by the name of Todd Young tweeted his disapproval of the sign, And I think I read someplace in this article, I didn't underline it, but I think this representative said that none of those things was true. And I remember my reaction or my thinking at the time when I read that was, so he must be an Islamic scholar to know that none of those things were true. I happen to know from just the reading that I've done, certainly just a smidgen compared to you, Bill, but I happen to know that all those things are true. And here we have politicians rising to the defense of something very, very, in my opinion, should have been non-offensive, stating truth and fact.
Well, I always like to ask this question to people. Where do you get your knowledge of Islam? Which is not a question they're used to being asked.
Yes.
Because I would like to ask this gentleman, where does he get his knowledge of Islam? And I'll be willing to bet a fine dinner for you and all your family that he got it from a nice Muslim.
Yes. Yeah.
Because anyone who's read the story of Muhammad knows that every one of those bullet points is just a few of a much longer list.
That's right.
By the way, there's something here that let's not pass over. I see people, Christians in particular, who want to argue the Quran versus the New Testament. This is not the way to do it. The way to deal with Islam is to forget about Allah, forget about the Quran, instead go directly to Muhammad. Notice something here. Every one of these actions, marrying a 6-year-old, everybody can comprehend that.
Yeah.
Everybody can comprehend executing 600 people in one day. Everyone can understand all. They know what a slave dealer is.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with the actions of a man.
Yes.
And this is all very easy to understand. Muhammad is the Achilles heel of Islam. Let me give you an example. I go to Europe twice a year because I have an organization in Europe. And one of the things, the best thing about what I do, Mike, are the people that I meet. And one of these people that I met is a Iraqi who studied in Germany, so he's fluent in English, and he left Iraq and came to Europe. He discovered my books, and in particular, I have 2 versions of the life of Muhammad. One of them is only 80 pages long. So what he does is he spends 6 months out of the year going to Iraq, and he goes and he has preached the gospel within the sounds of Islamic State's artillery.
No kidding.
This is a man.
That's true. Yes. Amen.
And anyway, he converts Muslims by the hundred to the gospel. And how does he do it? Does he preach the gospel? No, he does not preach the gospel. What he does is he asks them, how do you like Islamic State? And they say, well, they don't like this or that. He says, well, you know, Muhammad did that. Well, these poor Iraqi Muslims, they don't know that Muhammad did that. Mm. So he uses my little book as a pocket reference to say, see, here's what he did.
Wow.
Do you want that kind of person to be your salvation? And so what he does is he introduces the truth about Muhammad, not about the Quran, not about Allah, but the truth about Muhammad, because they can understand Muhammad as well. And there's no woo-woo factor.
Yes.
So as a consequence, he converts Muslims by the hundreds. I tell this story in hopes that somebody out there who's a Christian and wants to do gospel work would think about, you know, maybe there is a way to convert Muslims.
Yes.
And the open door is Muhammad.
Yes. Wow. That's a very, very good way to, that's a great strategy, Bill, in fact, and then you could even...
Now, by the way, you know the downside of this story?
What's that?
If I brought him to America and gave him the largest auditorium in the world, I couldn't get more than a dozen ministers to come hear a man talk about his success in converting Muslims.
Yeah. Well, I'd be one of the 12, Bill. I'd be there. You ever do that, you let me know. I will be there.
I find it appalling, the position of the church in this matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the church, I'll just say the Christian leadership.
Yes, yes. Leadership. Yeah, Christian leadership. And just hearing you talk about it like that, I was going to say I don't mean to offend, but maybe people need to be offended.
I gave up on that. Just offend them.
Yeah.
And smile.
That's right.
Never mean.
That's right. Just do it when you're smiling. But it just struck me, though, that the point that you were making is that you'd be hard-pressed in most, not all, but most of the larger churches, especially in America, if you brought somebody in like this Iraqi pastor to go over and he was going to give the real deal about what Islam really is and talk about Muhammad, who he really was, you probably wouldn't get very many people, because that would create some distress in their thinking, and then they'd have to reevaluate everything that they're hearing from the mainstream media and our universities and our public school systems, where they're, by the way, their children are being indoctrinated into this. But I'll come back to that point in a moment. Recently, Bill, and we were chatting just briefly about this before we went on the air. There's been a prominent Christian teacher, apologist, and debater by the name of James White, who entered into what he termed an interfaith dialogue, and he invited Iman Yasser Qadhi.
Yasser Qadhi?
Yes, Yasser Qadhi. So, see, you're shocked even to hear that name, aren't you?
I know. He invited the lion into the lambs.
Yes. Yeah. That's who he invited in, and he did everything he could to smooth everything over and say, we just want to understand one another, and we want to have this dialogue so that we can better understand Islam. And I was watching the video of this, and Qadhi was just sitting there, no facial expressions at all. Every once in a while, he'd rub his the chin of his beard, but no remarkable reaction. And I thought, Mr. White has been deceived. I don't know who got in his ear or what deceitful, deceiving spirit got a hold of him, but he has definitely been deceived by bringing this man into a Christian church and pronouncing that we could have a reasonable conversation and come to a mutual understanding. Those are my words, not his, but that's exactly what he was doing. And your reaction to that name, Bill, that speaks volumes.
Yasser Qadhi is a professional, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He's one of the Muslim Brotherhood's best agents.
Well, that says all that we need to know right there. It's part of the Muslim.
You know, and by the way, I am all for Mr. White's concept of understanding each other. As a matter of fact, that's all I want to do. I want people to understand Islam. Mr. White, I'll bet that meal for your family again at a fine restaurant, has never read the Sirah, never read the Hadith, and has probably read a verse or two of the Quran.
Right. Yep.
So why does he invite somebody in and not press the matter? And I don't mean in a mean or a fashion, but just to simply ask Mr. Yasser Qadhi questions.
Yes.
Like, is it true that Muhammad married a six-year-old? Is it true that he was a slave dealer? Yes. Is it true that he owned slaves? Is it true that he prayed while slaves were beaten? Is it true that he had a Jew killed by building a fire on his chest? Is it true? Because all of these things are true. I would love to be in front of Mr. Yasser Qadhi at a church, and I would ask him all manner of questions.
Yes.
All of which he would have to say, yes, it is true.
Yes. Yeah. Otherwise, he would be lying. Because, and you have all of the original sources for all of that. Well, that's answered the question, Bill. Why should we care about Islam? Now, I don't know too many people in my circle today that don't understand why we should care about Islam. But just in case someone stumbles across this conversation that we're having, Bill, and they're asking, well, why should I care? I mean, isn't that something that Muslims should be concerned about? It doesn't affect me. How would you respond to that?
Well, remember I told you I studied the Torah at an Orthodox synagogue for a year and a half?
Yes.
One of the things you learn is the Jews have a law called halakha, Jewish law. Jewish law says Jews don't eat bacon, okay?
Yeah.
Sharia says nobody gets to eat bacon once we get everything in place.
There you go.
That is, I am outside of halakha. I am outside of canon law, all right?
Yeah.
But no one is outside of Sharia law because Sharia says this is the supreme law for all humanity. So therefore, I have a little curiosity about something that it is supposed to dominate and rule over me. If you're telling me I'm going to walk all over you when I want to, I say, well, let me see why you're doing that because I want to stop you if I can.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and that is the difference. Christianity says, this is what I will live by because this is what I believe, and I'll invite you to believe the same thing, but I'm not going to do so at the point of a sword. I'm not going to do so such that if you don't convert and believe what I believe, then I'm just going to murder you. That's not Christianity. That's not Judaism. But that is Islam.
Well, it is true. The word Islam, perhaps we should introduce the definition of it. During George Bush's era, the favorite lie was Islam means peace. Islam means submission.
Yes.
Submission to what, Bill? Submission to the Quran and the Sunnah of Muhammad and the Sharia. That's what it means.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're telling me to submit, I want to know about it.
That's exactly right. What is it that I'm supposed to be submitting to? Because I may decide I'm not going to do that.
Actually, I've already made my decision.
That's right. I've heard you say, Bill, before on different programs, and these are some statistics, and I know that you love statistics, but I've heard you say that 51% of the combined trilogy of the Quran, the Hadith, and the Sirah is about kafirs, and
yes.
Only 49% give instructions about how the Muslim may enter into paradise. What's a kafir,
right.
And what does that mean for us?
Say again?
What is a kafir? If the trilogy is 51% about kafirs, then kafirs should know what's being said about them.
Well, that's what I say. And by the way, one of my little revolutionary acts is to try to introduce the word kafir, which is an Arabic word, into the English language.
Yes.
Usually it's translated as non-believer or infidel. But I love the word kafir because it's the original Arabic word. And whenever I'm dealing in any intercourse talking with a Muslim, I always let them know, you're a believer, I'm a kafir.
Mm.
I even had one Muslim tell me, why would you call yourself that? That's the worst word in the world. I says, yes, it is the worst word in the world. Kafir is filthy, hated by Allah. Kafirs are made for the purpose of burning in hell to his enjoyment. And I said, I want you to know that you call me a dirty kafir when I'm not around. I will use your dirty words to let you know I know who you are and what you say.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Let's go over this. The Quran says that Allah hates the kafir. There's even an ethical concept called wawala wabara, which means loving what Allah loves and hating what Allah hates. What does Allah hate? The kafir. Now think about what I just told you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's remarkable.
The kafir is filthy, and I had a scholar who was an apostate from Islam. He said, you need to understand the meaning of the word filthy kafir. He said, it's not filthy like the dirt in the garden. It's filthy like pus and menstrual blood and corruption.
Oh, boy.
The fluids that drain from a rotting corpse. It's that kind of filth and disgust.
Mm.
So I want people to know the word kafir. I want Mr. White, who had a meeting with Yasser Qadhi, I want him to know that he's a kafir.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So that's the way that a Muslim who understands what the trilogy says, that's how they look at us. And 51% of those three books, those three texts, deal with kafirs. And
yes, that's you and me.
Yeah, that you and me. Yeah, and that's not what most Americans expect to hear. So they're probably shocked at that. And the reason that they don't hear it is because that's a very poor evangelism tool, isn't it?
By the way, I find that it's easy to shock people about Islam because they really can't believe that true nature of it. They really can't believe what Islam is about. That is, jihad was practiced by Muhammad. Here's why something else they can't believe. That things like the practice of Islamic politics has killed 60 million Christians, 80 million Hindus, 10 million Buddhists, and 120 million Africans. One of the things that I tell Christian ministers is, why do you not know the history of the persecuted church?
Yes.
Why is it that you do not know that Damascus used to be the intellectual center of Christian thought? Why is it that you don't know that Egypt used to be Christian, North Africa used to be Christian, Turkey used to be Christian, Iraq used to be Christian, Persia used to be half Christian? Why don't you know these things?
Yes, exactly. Why don't they know those things? Part of it is, I think, Bill, that they've succumbed to political correctness and the belief that they should be ashamed about the history of Christianity. The Crusades is always thrown up in people's faces as if that was some kind of dastardly thing. And I'm not saying that there wasn't atrocities committed, but what I'm saying is that Islam in its spread took no captives, and they martyred and massacred Jews, Christians indiscriminately throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa on their way to conquest. Bill, the book, the Reliance of the Traveler and Tools for the Worshipper, is a book that many Muslims are encouraged to read. What is that about?
I'm looking up and over my shelf, over my computer monitor, I see the Reliance of the Traveler, a classic manual of Islamic sacred law. Well, right there's your first clue, sacred law. This is not man-made law. This is God's law. And in that, you know, people say, well, it all depends on how you interpret it. Have you heard that tortured reasoning about some verse in the Quran?
Yes.
Well, the Reliance of the Traveler translates and interprets that word for you.
Hmm.
Let's start with the word jihad.
Yes.
It says jihad is war against the kafir in order that he may be subjugated to the Sharia. So it's a fascinating read. The doctrine of loving what Allah loves and hating what Allah hates is found within there. How to be here, the one I love to bring up, there's a full page devoted on how to beat your wife.
Oh,
now, Mike, you're a minister, correct?
Yes.
Have you ever stood up and give a lecture from the pulpit on how to beat your wife?
No.
You haven't even thought about that to listen.
No.
Well, the Reliance of the Traveler, a book of sacred law, gives detailed instructions on how to beat your wife. Now, why does it do that? Well, Mike, the Surah 4, women in the Quran, gives the element of how to beat your wife and commands that you do it if she becomes belligerent and otherwise unrulable. And so the hadith, the traditions of Muhammad, include wife beating. So now, therefore, the Sharia, which is built upon the hadith and the Quran, must include how to beat your wife in there. So I'm a big fan of the Reliance of the Traveler because it interprets everything for us. And by the way, beating your wife is not to be done out of anger. This is a measured thing to subjugate her and to give her what Allah demands the husband's rights are. And his rights are that he be obeyed in all matters.
And yet we have feminists in America demonstrating for the implementation of Sharia law.
You know, sometimes I think there's just a race to the bottom.
Yeah, it's certainly what it seems like.
And by the way, let me say, since I'm a harsh critic of Christians and their matter of dealing with Islam, let me do the same thing with feminists. And that is, how come feminists do not object to female genital mutilation, also
yes.
found in the Sharia?
Right.
How come they don't object to wife beating? How come they don't complain about quick and easy divorce? How come they don't complain about the fact that the kids go to the husband, not the wife, and the divorce? It's written in the law.
Mm-hmm.
The feminist, how can they be so deaf, dumb, and blind?
Yeah. Well, I've got a belief about that. I think most of them are demonized, but that's another subject. Well, many people, Bill, say that if we want to understand what's coming to America, all we have to do is look over the big pond to Europe and see what's happening there and know mm-hmm. that it's going to come here eventually. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are I go to Europe and I am appalled at what I find. Now, let me tell you, there's some spunky people there who are pushing back. But the average citizen lives in fear now of his government, because you can get a knock on your door from the police if you put something in Facebook that Merkel doesn't like. Merkel is the leader of Germany.
Yeah.
There's an element of fear of two things in Europe. One is fear of Islam, and the other is fear of their government. It is appalling to see how far over the so-called otherwise sane people can bend. We have a new Prime Minister Macron of France. His sole purpose in dealing with Islam is how to placate, compromise, and otherwise make bad things go away if you just close your eyes and say we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's clearly a symptom of spiritual warfare, and from my perspective. And
by the way, let me ask you something.
Sure.
You mentioned some spiritual warfare, and there's gospel. There's verses in the New Testament about that.
Yeah.
Why is it that this is so horrifies Christians today, and they don't want anything to do with it?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it, Bill, is, and again, the answer is in the New Testament. I think a large measure or reason for it is because Paul's letter to two letters to Timothy. In both letters, he touches on this subject. He says that in the latter times, people will pay attention to deceitful spirits, and they will be introduced to and subscribe to the doctrines of demons. They will accumulate for themselves teachers who will tickle their ears. So in other words, tell them what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. And all of that plays right into the hands of a demonically inspired, total political system for every aspect of life, society, civilization, such as Islam. That's why I think people are turning a deaf ear to it, because it creates within them. If you come into, if you apprehend what's really going on and what Islam is really all about, you would have to be stark raving mad to turn a blind eye to it and to believe that if you just ignore it, it's going to go away. It is not going to go away. It's just going to continue to grow and foment, and at some point it's going to challenge for governing authority. And if you don't stand up now, then you're going to bow the knee later. And most people don't want to deal with that, Bill, in my opinion.
Well, I don't understand that kind of thinking.
I don't either, Bill. It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, what's frightening as well is that America is being set up for that exact future. And the reason that I say that is because there is, in my view, and I believe that you're in agreement with this, that there has been for many decades and continues to this day an ongoing campaign in our public schools and universities to completely whitewash the Arab and Muslim atrocities, their part in the slave trade, that, by the way, folks listening, that is still operating today. We took out the government of Libya, and you can believe whatever you want about Gaddafi. It's irrelevant at this point. But what's going on in Libya today is open slave trade, open slave markets, and people are being sold by Muslims, by Arabs today. It's still operating. Schools don't teach anymore, Bill. They don't teach critical thinking. They teach ideology. And I think that plays right into the hands of political Islam. What do you think?
I completely and absolutely agree with you. And let me say that it's much worse than you're telling me, because I can point out to you Christian schools that do not teach any of these truths.
Yeah. Yeah. Christian schools. Did you catch that, folks? Bill said Christian schools that are not teaching these things. Instead, they're teaching some form or some derivative of white guilt about the history of America and the part that whites played in the slave trade, and not recognizing or not even bringing up the fact that it was Muslims, Arabs, other blacks that actually gathered slaves together through jihad, through conquest, and brought them to the west coasts of Africa for sale to white slave traders. Or am I misspeaking, Bill?
No. You're not misspeaking at all. And there was a slave trade on the north coast of Africa. Over 1 million Europeans were taken into slavery. The women were all used for sex slaves. There was also a slave trade on the east coast of Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Widespread.
And so
millions.
We need to teach. Here's what I'm about, Mike. I want to teach all things. If it's a problem on my side, I want to teach the error
yes.
of what my side has done.
Yes.
But I also want to examine the full history and doctrine of those who oppose us. And I say that in reference to Islam.
Yes.
So let's study the complete history of slavery.
Yes.
And by the way, I mentioned earlier that 120 million Africans were killed by jihad. That jihad was always for the purpose of slave trade.
Yes, that's right. That's right, because that's how they...
And Muhammad did this.
That's how they raised funds, wasn't it?
Yes. Muhammad's first large wholesale selling of slaves were Jews, and he sold the slaves, women and children, and he killed the men. And what he used the money for was to buy horses and armor. By the way, let me say something about Muhammad that most people don't know. He was a very thrifty man. He spent almost nothing on himself. His robes were tattered. He repaired his own shoes. He spent all the money he gathered for the purpose of jihad.
Yes. Yeah. All of it. For further conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's totally dedicated.
Yes. Well, this kind of conversation we're having, Bill, we we would be getting a knock on the door at some point later today. If we were in some other countries.
We definitely would.
Yeah. 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 They'd be there to arrest us because listen, it's, I think that the government of the United States is just waiting for the right time to spring it. The climate is not right yet, but we've got hate crime laws on the books. Now, I know Canada is in the midst of big turmoil over this, and Trudeau, it's a wonder they, and I don't know what their impeachment process is, if they even call it that, but I'm surprised that there hasn't been rumblings about running him out of office. I mean, he is one of the most outrageous Islamic sympathizers I think I've seen on the political stage in the Western world in my lifetime.
Mike, you missed the whole point. He's charming and good looking. What do you want?
Yeah. How about somebody that's...
one of my goals in my life that I have left is I want to be banned from ever visiting Canada.
I've got some friends up there. We could maybe send this episode over and see if they'll air it. That would probably do it, Bill. That'd probably get it done. Yeah, Canada for sure. They're riding a razor's edge right now. It's getting real dicey in Canada.
By the way, out of all the freedoms that we have guaranteed to us in our Constitution, and by the way, when I go to Europe, Europeans are jealous of our Bill of Rights.
Yes.
The most critical freedom we have is speech.
Yes.
And I'll include the press under that.
For sure.
Because, Mike, once you can no longer speak your mind, all those other so-called rights you have will disappear very rapidly.
That's a fact. Very true, Bill. Very true. Well, we've got a crisis brewing right here in America related to refugees. Because we're not getting the whole story. on this subject, and I'm very happy to say that I see increasing resistance to that and pushback from folks. What is the truth? And in fact, this article, "The Truth About Refugees for Christians," what do Christians need to know about this so-called refugee crisis?
Well, I can talk for a long time about this, but I'm going to tell you a little story to start off with. A friend of mine, not a friend, an acquaintance of mine, is a U.S. citizen, former Iraqi Christian. Her mother finally got to come to America. She was on a 747. She was the only Christian on the plane. All the others were, quote, refugees, Muslims.
Wow.
Now, Mike, do the numbers. What's wrong with what I just told you?
Yeah, it's disproportionate for sure.
And you know why this is true? I'm going to step on some toes again. Mm-hmm. This is because Christians don't care.
That's right.
Muslims do care that they want the Muslims to come over here, but Christians do not care at all. Christians are the ones who bring the Muslims over here.
Yes.
Catholic Charities is the one who does it here in Nashville, but don't worry, the Lutherans do it, the Jews do it. Many religious groups do it. So the problem is that we're bringing in refugees, and we bring in refugees that will cause us problems later.
Yes.
Now, I have friends, as I told you, in Europe, and I remember the Iraqi Christian I told you about?
Yes, yes.
He said, I've met these refugees, and he said, they're not refugees. He said, I was a refugee, and I would drink water out of a puddle in the street. He says, these refugees won't drink a bottle of water if it has a red cross on it. They'll throw it on the ground. They object to food that's anywhere near the serve date. He said, these are not refugees. He said, these are strong fighting men.
Yes.
And he says, they come from all over the world, a lot of them Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But the so-called Syrian refugees, he said, I would estimate that one in five even comes from Syria. And these are all fighting weight men, fighting age men.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you something. If your country were being attacked, when the British were being attacked in the Second World War, did all the Brits pull up and leave and come to America? No, they stood and fought.
Yes.
So now let me tell you something else that doesn't make sense about all these refugees, which is this. In Europe, the refugees are needed, they say, for work. Well, they have 20% and 30% unemployment in Greece and Spain. Why not take the refugees from Greece and Spain if they need work in Germany?
Yeah.
So there's nothing about this that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But the other thing that doesn't make any sense is that it's difficult to talk about it, even in Europe. Now, in America, we can still talk about it, and I believe that we should.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. And you made a very good point there, Bill, that many of the organizations that are really advocating for and taking part in the management of bringing refugees into their cities, into America, but into their cities where they're operating, many of those organizations are Christian. You mentioned Catholic Charities, certainly others, I'm sure, through the United Methodists, the Lutherans you mentioned, probably Presbyterians as well. They're helping the government to accomplish its mission of bringing more and more refugees in. Now here's the disturbing part for me. I read, maybe I heard you say, or I read someplace where they're getting paid per refugee that they assist and get them assimilated into the local community. They're actually making money. This isn't charity. This isn't loving your neighbor in the broadest possible sense. This is all about fattening the church budget.
Well, they get their 30 pieces of silver, that's for sure.
Yes.
Let me tell you one of the things they sign off on their contract. I presume you're familiar with the scripture, so when I use the term Great Commission, you're familiar with it?
Yes, Matthew 28.
They sign a contract which says they will not preach the gospel to these people.
Well, talk about selling your soul to the devil. Why would you sign off to say, I'm going to do nothing, I won't lift a finger, I won't open my mouth to share the gospel of Jesus Christ that alone saves someone from eternal damnation and separation from God? Why would you do that, and how could you do it and still call yourself a Christian?
30 pieces of silver.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I warned you I could be harsh.
Yeah, well, you know what? But it's the truth, and it's much needed, and I don't consider it harsh. I consider it very timely, and so I appreciate your frankness and your candidness Bill, as always. Let's talk, in the last few moments we have, Bill, let's talk a little bit about your organization, Political Islam, and especially the website, politicalislam.com. I know you've got lots of resources there. Folks can actually sign up, and the price is fantastic. You're not going to find this kind of material and this level of coursework, resources available in articles and books. You're not going to find it any place. And it, in my opinion, because I've already looked at it, it is the equivalent, probably more than college-level courses in understanding. In fact, I'm just going to say it. It would run circles around what you might get in your local college or university, because they're not going to tell the truth about Islam. Go to Bill's website, politicalislam.com. Check out the courses, video courses, books that are made available when you take that. And Bill, I'll let you explain a little bit more about it for our listeners.
Well, we also have newsletters. We have videos that I make. Actually, I'm going to brag. I made one video that got put on called Why We Are Afraid. It's had over 4 million views on
wow, that's fantastic.
YouTube.
That's fantastic.
And by the way, it's a video I highly recommend, because I've had, when I was in Europe on one of my trips, I had a man buy me the most expensive breakfast I've ever had. He was called the Coca-Cola King of Europe. And he said, I wanted to meet you because, he said, my ancestors, my grandparents were Greek Orthodox Christians. And he says, until I saw your video, Why We Are Afraid, I never understood the stories they tried to tell me about leaving Turkey and coming to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
So it will show you a history that will make sense, but one that you've never heard before. And what I do on my website, politicalislam.com, is to educate people by videos, by books, and by newsletters about the truth of Islam. And remember, I encourage you to be skeptical about everything I teach. Check it out for yourself.
Yep, exactly. And that's, you know, a man can stand on what he said. He's well-researched, presents it well, but he can stand on the truth when he tells you, you don't have to believe anything I say. Go check it out for yourself. It's there for those who will take the time to do the research and reading. Well, Bill, it's been a great pleasure and blessing for me to chat with you again. And I would like to just put in a request now to have you back on soon rather than later. There's so much more to talk about on this subject. I think we could do a little deeper dive into why Islam is so confusing, and part of the answer to that is because of the dualistic nature.
We didn't even touch on dualism.
We didn't touch on that. We can do that next time, and I think that would be great benefit to our listeners to understand why. See, because we want to go down this road, or we'll be going another 20 minutes, Bill. But in Western civilization, we go and operate by logic, reason, the law of non-contradiction. But Islam doesn't operate that way at all,
nope.
Does it?
Nope.
Nope, it doesn't. So that'll be a little teaser for the next time we come on. Maybe we'll start with that and then do a little deeper dive. Would that be okay, Bill?
Fine. I enjoy our conversations. You're easy to work with.
Well, Bill, I appreciate you too, and thank you for joining me on this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio Program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek Him.